Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Chris James. The McAllen Library event is here. If you're going to swing by, I'll see you there. If you're not, well, maybe next time. If you'd like to attend, you might want to call ahead. The number to call is 956-681-3000. Or you can register at mcallenlibrary.libnet.info/events. Now, I understand there might be a few seats left, so if you want to take a chance and just show up, go for it. But you might want to call ahead just to be sure. Tonight's show is made possible because the Organic Man Coffee Trike keeps me going. Coffee is the lifeblood of my world. 4501 McPherson, where you can get the best coffee on the planet. If you aren't in Laredo, you can get your coffee by going to organicmancoffeetrike.shop. Their new office hours are 6:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. You hear these stories all the time. Somebody's out in the woods when they encounter some kind of a creature. It looks like it should be able to kill them and eat them without any trouble. Yet, somehow, the witness manages to escape with their life. In many of these encounters, the creature chases them through the woods. A 7 or 8 foot tall animal, or being, should be able to run us down without any trouble. Many folks tell about how these creatures chase them, sometimes for miles. Mike Woolley was out deer hunting in the woods near Ketchy, Louisiana, December 1981, when a deer came running into the clearing where his stand was, and it came and laid on the ground right under his ladder. This is not normal behavior for animals out in the wild, so he sat there staring at this animal. When he looked up from the deer, he saw a 7 or 8 foot tall, black, hairy humanoid creature. Great, now my cat has found something to play with. He saw this creature. His first impression was that somebody had put on a suit and was trying to mess with him. Trying to scare him or, you know, get him to leave the deer stand. He yelled at the guy. He called it a bunch of names, probably swore at it a bit. When it didn't answer back, he raised his rifle and he looked at this thing through his scope. This is when he realized that this was no man in a suit. If anyone, I don't care who they are, no matter if they have ice water in their veins, if somebody aims a rifle at you, you're going to put your hands in the air and yell for them to not shoot. Well, everybody except Iceman. Iceman does have ice water flowing through his veins, and he proved it. A guy stuck a gun in his face, and Iceman just grabbed it and yanked it out of his hands. Well, that's a story for another show, but some people do have ice water. At this point, the Bigfoot that Mike was looking at let out a roar that was quickly answered by a whistle from a few hundred yards away. The first Bigfoot answered by whistling as well. That's when Woolley discovered that there might be more than one creature. Fearing for his life, he jumped down from the deer stand and he ran for his truck. Looking back, he saw the creature was plowing through the brush right after him. He reached his truck, and in order to gain a few minutes, few seconds, he spun around and he fired over the creature's head. Now, I've noticed this in a lot of stories, people who are armed, and yet they don't want to shoot this thing, fearing that the bullet will only make them upset. It won't do enough damage to take them down. He managed to get in his truck, and as he was driving away, he looked back, and he saw that there were several of these huge, hairy creatures, and they were coming into the clearing from several directions. They'd had him surrounded. Two or three 8-foot tall creatures that are built for life in the woods should have had no trouble running down Mike and doing to him what they were going to do to that deer. Mike was highly motivated to get out of there, but the Bigfoot were probably highly motivated to catch their dinner. Even though Mike was 26 at the time he had his encounter, he wasn't that fast of a runner. Plus, he was moving through thick brush. The creatures chasing him just pushed the trees out of their way. A 19-year-old man was chased by Bigfoot while mountain biking in Washington State, 1995. It was winter time and it had snowed, but he thought it'd still be a good time to go out and hit the trails. As he was heading out, he encountered a couple who were coming off of the trail that he was heading out on. They said there was some kind of a big animal up the trail and that he should keep an eye out for it. They didn't know what it was just big. He was following the trail back the way they had come, and he spotted what looked like footprints in the snow, but they were barefoot. Who would be crazy enough to run around barefoot in the snow? And these looked to be out about 16 to 20 inches long. He looked at the tracks, thought, well, maybe it was a bear. You know how bears will walk? They'll step one foot on top of the other, and it makes their footprints look kind of weird. So he ignored the footprints, and he just kept on riding. He followed the trail until it came to an end, and it was time to turn around and head back. As he was turning, he could spot something that was about 8 or 9 feet tall that was watching him from behind a tree. It would move from one tree to the next as if it was trying to get closer to him. The only way he could describe this was it looked like Bigfoot. The biker got going along the trail. The thing began to run along, but on a separate trail. It wasn't behind him, it was paralleling him. He could smell what he described as rotten eggs and sewage. The creature was running through the woods. As the biker flew along, he noticed that the trail that he was going on was about to bend towards the creature, and that him and it were going to arrive at the same spot at about the same time. He put on a burst of speed, praying that he wouldn't crash. He managed to get to the intersection with the Bigfoot just inches away. He didn't look back, keeping his full attention on the trail ahead. After pedaling as fast as he could and as far as he could, he stopped to catch his breath and listen. The creature yelled from just a few yards behind him. Well, this is all it took to get him going some more. When he got to the parking lot and rode over to his car, he could hear this thing. It was crashing through the brush coming towards him. It sounded like it was circling his position through the woods. The man jumped in his car and sped out of there as fast as he could. The Bigfoot that was chasing him would slow down any time that he slowed. If he stopped, it would make a lot of noise that would get him to continue riding. There was no doubt the creature could have caught the cyclist at any time along the trail, and yet it didn't. July 2020, a woman said she was chased by a Bigfoot in New York's Hudson Valley. The encounter took place in Hyde Park. The woman said this huge creature came running towards her. She heard the brush crashing. She heard heavy footsteps. The creature jumped in a tree above her, and the branches and leaves started to rain down from above. The creature started to move from tree to tree. She said she was terrified. The creature looked to be about 6 or 7 feet tall, covered with dark brown or red hair. She thought it looked more like a gorilla. It swung from tree to tree, from branch to branch, and it moved around her as if it were about to drop to the ground and kill her. Well, she took off running for wherever she could get to, and for no known reason, the creature didn't chase her from the woods. She was able to follow the trail back to the parking lot, convinced that at any second this creature was going to grab her. How did these witnesses manage to survive? Any creature taller than us that lives in the woods and hunts for its food should have no problem catching us Littlefoot. We have to follow what trails are available, while a Bigfoot can simply make his own as he goes. A lot of folks talk about Bigfoot as being, and I'll quote Chester Moore Jr. here, a granola-munching, tree-hugging forest creature. People talk about Bigfoot as being a benign creature who frolics in the meadows with other animals. Bigfoot eats other animals. If they chase down a deer and kill it, what's to stop them from doing the same to us? Now, I'm not one to advocate killing a Bigfoot, only if you have to. I go in the woods, I carry a friend of mine, a .45 ACP. Now, I'm also known as being a woo, and this is not a compliment. I've had people refuse to talk to me once they discover that I believe that Bigfoot might not necessarily be a flesh and blood creature. As soon as paranormal activity enters the conversation, you can watch as the blinders come on. Suddenly, they don't want to talk anymore. I do believe we don't know very much about these huge hairy animals, or creatures, guys, whatever you want to call them. I just hope that there is enough flesh and blood to them that a slow-moving hot chunk of lead will do some damage to them. If not, I guess I'm carrying my weapon for no reason. People have been chased by other things that should be able to run them down and have them for dinner. Things like Dogman or werewolves. I found this story from Italy, where a boy, 12 years old, was chased by a huge werewolf. This took place maybe 50 or 60 years ago. The boy was walking home through the countryside. As he walked, he heard something walking along behind him. Turning, the boy saw a huge black hair-covered creature that he could only describe as being a werewolf. He took off running for home. The monster was right on his heels. As he got close to his home, he began screaming for his brother to open the door. As the boy jumped up onto the porch, the front door swung open, and he flew inside. His brother looked out the door, and he saw this werewolf coming right at him. He slammed the door and locked it. The creature was described as being enormous. It should have had no problem knocking the door right off of its hinges. The monster stayed outside, circling the house for a few minutes before walking away back into the woods. Neither the boy nor his brother ever saw this thing again, but folks in town did report seeing a huge black wolf that walked on two legs. It was seen all over the area for several months before the stories began to die down. Here in the U.S., in Scioto County, Ohio, north of Kentucky, and a little west of West Virginia, a man owned a cabin out in the thick woods. The whole family would get together there for weekends and holidays. They looked forward to these get-togethers. One day, without any reason, the owner called off all of these outings. His family asked why, but he just mumbled something unintelligible. After a few years, nobody bothered asking any more questions. Eventually, the man died and he left the cabin to one of his grandchildren. In 2005, the grandson, went out to the cabin to see just how much repairs were needed and whether or not it was even worth trying. The place was in need of repairs, but nothing that the folks from the main cabin masters couldn't handle. Not that he called them. They're in Maine and he's in Kentucky. Once the place was livable, the new owner went to walk through the woods. Something he had missed over the years while his granddad was keeping everybody away. He was able to remember most of the trails and where they led. He felt at home in the woods. One day, while just wandering around, he spotted a side trail that he didn't remember ever having seen before. It was well used, and it looked like it had been there for years. At the end of this trail was a kind of a nest-looking construction. Something big was using this out-of-the-way place as its home. The feeling of dread came over him. He felt as if he'd walked into a trap or something. Oh, great, now my cat's howling. The sun had already gone down and it was dark. If you've never been in the woods at night, trust me, it gets dark. The guy pulled his flashlight out and he began scanning the trees. Something was putting him on edge, but he didn't know what. A growl came from the darkness about 10 or 15 feet away. This was like nothing he'd ever heard. This was no mountain lion, no bear. It sounded way too big and unnatural. He knew he had about a 10-minute walk back to the cabin. Now he just had to get there. The howl was repeated, and he said he could feel the sound as it passed through his body. Well, that was all it took. He began to run as fast as he could. As he went, he could hear something running behind him, and it was getting closer. The thing behind him was closing faster than the distance to the cabin was diminishing. You reach a point you just can't go any faster, and he was there. And no more speed in his legs as the thing behind got closer and closer. The man was following the trail. The thing chasing him began making its own trail, crashing through the brush like a runaway bulldozer. Somehow, the guy managed to make it to the cabin. As he was slamming the door and locking it, he heard the thing arrive on the front porch. He had no gun. All he had was a handheld spotlight. Well, he shined the light out the windows, hoping that this would drive the beast away. As he looked out the window, he saw three sets of bright yellow eyes all looking back at him. He nearly fell to the floor, realizing he'd been chased by several somethings. These creatures moved back and forth through the trees, keeping an eye on the cabin for most of the night. By sunup, they were all gone. He packed his bags and got out of there. Now knowing why his grandfather had stopped these family outings, he was able to outrun three monsters. Why didn't they simply pounce on him and be done with it? Not every encounter has a semi-happy ending. Sometimes those involved don't make it to sunup. There was an incident at the Land Between the Lakes, a park that sits in northern Tennessee and southern Kentucky. An entire family was torn apart by an unknown animal. The story goes that passing campers called the police when they saw a camper with its door open and what looked like blood splashed all over the ground. When the sheriff's department arrived, they found three bodies mauled and torn. There was an adult male, presumably the father, who was in pieces, but they were able to find some hair that was trapped in the man's fist. There was also what looked like a woman and a small child. It was that bad of a scene, they weren't sure at first. A DNA then indicated that the fur was some kind of unknown canine species. The incident was covered up so as to not hurt the tourism industry and to keep the public from castigating the sheriff and his men for not being able to catch this thing, whatever it was. Is it in order for a story to be told that somebody has to survive? Well, yes, unless it's a police report. What I'm getting at is, why do so many folks manage to get away from these far superior hunters? How is it people can outrun monsters that know the trails and some of them can see in the dark? Why do a few wind up in pieces while others escape? One theory is these creatures aren't actually trying to kill people, only run them out of some place where these creatures want to keep to themselves. If this is the case, why do other people manage to walk right through the same area without any kind of a bizarre encounter? Back in the old days, people had encounters with hairy creatures that they called wild men. In many of these accounts, the encounter ended in a death of either one or more of the witnesses or the creature itself. Indians had legends of hairy people living in the woods around them that as long as you didn't mess with them, they would leave you alone. Well, there were a few stories of things that weren't quite so friendly between the tribes and the creatures in the woods. There were a group of tribes in an area where these creatures were kidnapping their women and children. Well, the tribe sent out a search party to find and drive off these creatures, which they did. There was a massive fight ensued between the Indians and these hair-covered beings. Today, we'd call them Bigfoot, but at the time, they used tribal names for these creatures. Depending on where in the world you were, the behavior of these creatures was different. Ryan RPG Golembeski? I guess that's how it's pronounced. Ryan RPG Golembeski was being interviewed on one of the many podcasts that I follow. He came out with a theory that many thought was heresy. I liked his ideas. He said, and I'm going off of my memory here, there are creatures living in the woods that stand 7 to 9 feet tall. They're covered in hair, and they do not pose a threat to us as long as we don't present a threat to them. These are the Bigfoot that folks like Patterson and Gimlin encountered in the Bluff Creek incident back in 1967. There are other things out there that know us humans are looking for Bigfoot. These beings can mimic the appearance of Bigfoot, allowing us to see them sometimes and interact with us. When our guard is down, they may invite us back to their camp for dinner as the main course. Those who consider themselves to be the one and only true knowledge base on all things Bigfoot, consider this nonsense. After all, Bigfoot is just an ape. Seeing as we don't actually know that much about Bigfoot, we don't know what they might do to us should we have a sit-down with one or several. According to search and rescue records, maybe as many as 15 to 2,000 people go missing from state and national parks each year. The number might be twice as many since the park refuses to report just how many people actually do disappear. Most are written off as being bear attacks or people who simply decided to vanish. 2,000 isn't all that many people, as long as you're not one of the missing or a family member who's trying to find them. There are 2,474 state parks and 63 national parks in the United States. That would mean about 2 or 3 people could vanish from each park in a year. Well, some of these parks are very small. They don't allow camping in them. Some are inside or next to big cities. Some are even inside of cities. The guys on Belief Hole have come out with an idea that some national parks were purposely created on sites where some kind of creatures lived that would more than likely hunt humans. Kind of like an agreement between the government and these beings. They call it the containment theory. I know it sounds bizarre, but consider it like this. Some secret government agency wants to study huge monsters. Maybe they want to use them to create a monster army that could be used to take over the world. A Yellowstone was created in 1872. I don't see anybody at that time wanting to study giant hair-covered creatures or take over the world, but who knows? Maybe they did exist, and maybe that's what they wanted to do. Maybe there were people back then with huge ambitions. The last national park to be created was New River Gorge in 2020. Look at how many unsolved mysteries there are in these locations. In California's Shasta Trinity National Forest, Mount Shasta has been the focus of bizarre tales for hundreds of years. There are stories of a hidden city within the mountain. There are Bigfoot sightings as well as UFOs spotted near the mountain. Many people say there might be an alien base inside this thing. Our government is in charge of the entire area. They can decide who can enter and who has to stay out and whether or not to close the place down for whatever reason. In Grand Canyon, there was a cave filled with Egyptian artifacts. Hieroglyphs were on all the walls. The authorities say there's no such thing. The Egyptians couldn't sail across the Atlantic Ocean because it wouldn't fit into today's narrative on old Chris back in 1492. The area where the cave is has been off limits to everyone since the late 1800s. Not even the Indians that live in the area are allowed to enter that part of the park. Manifest destiny. A phrase coined in 1845 is the idea that the United States was destined by God to expand its domain and spread democracy and capitalism across the entire North American continent. The philosophy drove 19th century U.S. territorial expansion and was used to justify the forced removal of Indians and other groups from their homes. After the Civil War, the Smithsonian began sending out expeditions to look for anything that might make stealing Indian land look bad, as if stealing their land didn't already look bad enough. If the Indians had some huge cities or structures, say a bunch of cliff dwellings inside a canyon, they would be erased from history so that the settlers would move in without feeling too bad about taking somebody else's home. Anything that didn't fit in with the current story of how the United States came to be was simply destroyed or covered up. A lot of artifacts were shipped off to Washington and hidden away in some back room of a museum. Any areas of land with stories of bizarre creatures, maybe, could have been recorded and turned into some of the first national parks. Glacier, Badlands, Mesa Verde, the Grand Canyon, and Death Valley were all once land that had been deeded to the Indians. Reservations were created to keep those people away from the rest of society. When the land was suddenly found to be worth something, or maybe things were found there that the government wanted to keep secret, the government waltzed in and took a big chunk of it for the good of the rest of society. What did the government learn about these areas after telling the Indians they could have the land as long as the sun shines, the grass grows, and the rivers flow? Well, that didn't last very long. A funny fact is the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the National Park Service are under the same main office, and they are closely connected. This could be considered a conspiracy theory once you dig deep enough. I don't think some hair-covered being sat down with some government agents and discussed where they would be allowed to live. To me, it's more like some government agency looked at reports of wild men living in areas and said, we should keep these creatures alive and study them, see what we might learn and gain from them. What is a good way to study creatures you don't understand? One way would be to see how they interact with those, say, humans. Let a few folks into the area and see if they encounter any monsters. A lot of folks aren't going to report what they see, so you'd have to run a lot of people through an area in order to get enough reports to be able to make a guess as to what's going on. And not wanting too much publicity, you could come out later and make fun of anyone who says they saw Bigfoot. Why keep a lid on Bigfoot sightings? Well, money is one reason. Logging industry pays a lot of money into the government each year. Billions of tax dollars are paid into the government. If a forest were to become home to some huge hairy being, how long would it be before Congress was pressured into creating a Bigfoot sanctuary? Somebody would want to make parks off limits to everybody so the Bigfoot weren't disturbed by sightseers. Another possibility for not keeping people out of Bigfoot areas could just have to do with fear. People who encounter Bigfoot sometimes tell about how scared they were. People who were inside a cabin while an 8-foot-tall creature roamed around outside trying to get in or at least let them know it was still out there. Sometimes people were killed making the idea of running into Bigfoot or Dogman that much scarier. Back in March 2022, I did a show called The Oscuros. It is about beings that live on emotions. Fear is a strong emotion, and the more fear in the world, the stronger these things can get. Just look at any news article today. It's the end of the world, every day, all day. There has been a major conflict somewhere on our planet since World War II came to a close. Why would world governments want people to live in fear? Well, the puppet masters might be telling them what to do so they can feed on our emotions. The payment to these officials would be a guarantee that they can stay in power, not at the top of the power chain, but in power around towards the middle, higher in the food chain than the rest of us. If RPG was right, maybe these creatures that mimic Bigfoot or Dogman do so to instill fear in those who encounter them, as well as anybody hearing about the event. Just put yourself in these folks' shoes. Well, boots, since they're hiking. You're walking through the woods when you run into a huge hairy beast that turns and attacks. You take off running as fast as you possibly can. The thing is right behind you. You can hear it crashing through the brush. You know you're going to die. All you can think is how you just hope and pray that it's not going to be too painful. Your heart is pounding and your entire body is shaking. You run and somehow manage to make it back to safety. Are you going to think, "Now, how in the world did I do that?" Or are you going to start telling people you know so that they can share in the thrill of a near-death experience at the hands of a monster? Are you going to relive this story several times? An emotion is a complex experience that involves consciousness, bodily sensation, and behavior. According to the American Psychological Association, it is a complex reaction pattern that involves experiential, behavioral, and psychological elements. Emotions are how individuals deal with matters or situations they find personally significant. Emotions are not just feelings, but the meaning we make from a given situation. Emotions have three components: a subjective experience, a psychological response, and a behavioral or expressive response. Once you've had a run-in with Bigfoot or Dogman, you're never going to walk in the woods again. Wouldn't that be the end of the free meal for these beings? Not if the whole thing was about the most stressful thing you've ever done. The encounter is going to haunt your dreams. You're going to relive it many times over the rest of your lifetime. Each time you relive it, the emotions will well up and exit your body. The beings looking from emotional fixes can home in on the energy source and draw them out like sipping a cup of coffee. What kind of a thing could use our emotions as a source of food? Some kind of trans-dimensional being, perhaps? Scientists at Oak Ridge National Laboratory in eastern Tennessee are trying to open a portal to a parallel universe. The project hopes to find a world identical to ours, where life is mirrored to us. Lee Brossard, the physicist leading the experiment, says that the plan is kind of out there, it's kind of weird, but it would change the entire game of the world. They're planning to do several of these experiments. Broussard's experiment will fire a beam of subatomic particles down a 50-foot tunnel. The beam will pass a powerful magnet and hit an impenetrable wall with a neutron detector behind it. If the experiment is successful, particles will transform into mirror images of themselves, allowing them to burrow right through the impenetrable wall. How do they know this? I guess they just keep messing around with things until eventually they're going to blow something up, like the world. Why on earth would people want to open a portal to another dimension? That's what scientists do. The boys in the white lab coats are so wrapped up in being able to do something, then they never ask, is it safe? Why did I just hear Dr. Christian Zell speaking? Oh yes, Marathon Man. I asked my dentist if she's ever seen the movie, and she said she hadn't, but her assistant started laughing because she had seen the Marathon Man. Go see Marathon, you don't go see it, watch Marathon Man next time you're about to go to the dentist's office. It'll make the experience so much more exciting. Anyway. These experiments are being carried out by folks who don't realize that somebody has already been doing them for years. The Ouija board is a form of portal device that allows spirits to come from another dimension. The dead, and sometimes other things, pass from there to here when a talking board is being used. It is one of those things, if you don't know what you're doing, don't do it. There are a number of areas around the world known to be energetic hotspots, from ancient megaliths to ley lines. These areas are hyperdimensional gateways. We don't know how to open a portal to another dimension, but there are some folks who do. Portal areas have some type of an electromagnetic significance and are located near large deposits of quartz or other minerals with piezoelectric properties. NASA announced in 2012 that the University of Iowa physicist Jack Shuter found hard evidence of portals created by the interaction between the Earth and the Sun's magnetospheres. These portals are extremely volatile and unpredictable, opening and closing in the matter of seconds. Shuter found markers called X-points, or electron diffusion regions, which allowed NASA probes to locate and study them. Study, and maybe go through? If NASA does manage to contact beings from another dimension, what will be the outcome? Just think back of the Indians meeting up with Europeans back in the day. Boy, was there a one-sided conquest. A probe entering some other dimension could attract unwanted attention to those of us who don't think we know any better. Just maybe we won't wind up being destroyed by visitors from beyond. Our ancestors identified particular places considered energetically anomalous, and in these areas, one finds either a succession of temples or a temple that has withstood the test of time. The thing to keep in mind is our ancestors might have recognized these sites, but maybe they didn't open them and go messing about with other people's worlds. Maybe they simply had verbal contact with beings from the other side, but they didn't invite them to come visit our world. Every scientific advancement is looked at as a being a possible new weapon by the folks in the Pentagon. If they find a portal, they're going to try and figure out how to take that portal and connect it up to somebody else's country and then use it to mess with them. There have been many civilizations that simply vanished. Maybe they opened a portal and they asked for the wrong thing. What happened to Atlantis? Could it be some priest managed to open a portal and ask the beings on the other side for a little something to teach those people a lesson about who is the bigger dog on our planet? The next thing you know, the entire place is sinking. Atlantis isn't the only civilization that went away without any reason for its end. Mohenjo-Daro was destroyed about 1900 BC. How about the Mayans, who walked away from their huge cities about 600 AD? Why did they leave? Maybe somebody was messing around with a portal, and the next thing they knew, some race of beings had moved in and drove them out. What might have become of these new inhabitants of the Mayan cities? Maybe they're still out there. Cahokia was a major Indian city, feather, not dot, on the east side of the Mississippi River across from modern-day St. Louis, Missouri. Cahokia flourished from 1050 to 1250 AD. The Rattlesnake Causeway was initially aligned to the Milky Way. It is proposed that this alignment accounts for the 5-degree offset of the site from the cardinal directions north, south, east, and west. It has been suggested that Rattlesnake Causeway was a terrestrial metaphor for the Milky Way, the path of souls used by the deceased to cross to the land of the dead. The dead would enter this portal to the path of souls. The land of the dead was guarded by a giant serpent, which is located in our constellation, Scorpius. If you've read about Skinwalker Ranch or you follow the TV show, you'll be aware of that weird thing they found near the rock spiral that was built to represent a portal. It sits about 30 to 35 feet up in the air. The biggest mound in Cahokia is about 100 feet high. It was built by hand. All the dirt had to be carried and dumped out over the years. Why build a mound of dirt when you could just go clear the top of a mountain? Could the Indians have been trying to access a portal that wasn't very close to the ground? The people who built Cahokia packed up and left about 1400. Maybe they knew that old Chris was on his way, or did they open a portal and suddenly the place wasn't all that comfortable to live in? Angkor Wat in Cambodia was abandoned in the 1500s. The Olmecs developed their civilization along the Gulf of Mexico 1100 BC and vanished in around 300 BC. What might have caused these people to all leave their great cities and wander off to who knows where? Still, the boys in the white lab coat want to open portals and see what happens. When was the last time you heard somebody say, "I didn't expect that to happen"? Graham Hancock referenced the many stories of Native shaman traversing planes of consciousness through the use of psychedelic substances such as ayahuasca. Within this ecstatic state, the shaman reported meeting teachers and guides who provide advice and wisdom for living within the everyday realm of our existence. These shaman traveled to other dimensions. They didn't invite the beings on the other side to come back with them. Legend has it that when the Spanish conquistadors arrived to Peru to loot the Inca's gold, the priest Amuro Miru used the Hayu Marca as a portal to escape. Miru placed a golden disc known as the Key to the Gods of the Seven Rays into a socket in the center of Hayu Marca. Opened a portal and allowed him to walk through the stone, never to be seen again. One man going into a portal and never coming back, as opposed to opening a portal and allowing something to come through. At what time could these emotion-eating beings have slipped into our world? In the 1940s, a group of occultists became interested in the area known as Arroyo Seco, or the Dry Creek, and attempted rituals intended to open a portal to hell. Why, you might ask? Well, because they could, or at least they thought they could. The group included rocket scientist Jack Parsons and a guy named L. Ron Hubbard. Their goal was to bring forth a moon child, which they hoped would be the Antichrist that would lead the Thelemic Revolution. They wanted to bring beings up from the depths of hell and turn them loose on the face of the earth. Rocket scientists at their best. The guy who started Jet Propulsion Laboratories was trying to bring on the Antichrist. In the 1950s, after Parsons perished in an accidental explosion, well, that's what they tell us happened to him, several children went missing in the area around Devil's Gate Dam. Two other children seemed to have vanished into thin air. One after turning a corner right in front of his parents, and the other one was returning to the YMC campsite. In both instances, the children only left supervision for a matter of seconds when they disappeared. Some people believe that the ritual Parsons had led in the area opened a portal to hell and made the area a magnet for all kinds of nasty, weird activity. Around the end of World War II, things really went south. People began to want things that they shouldn't have. Dangerous things. Well, people have wanted these kind of things forever, but they didn't really have the means to attain them. Suddenly, with all the advancements made in fighting the Nazis, it became possible to turn these dreams into realities. As people wanted more power, they began to believe any price was right as long as they got what they wanted. He who dies with the most toys wins. This is supposing they're all going to die like the rest of us. The search for the Philosopher's Stone, or some modern equivalent of it, has led to some people doing unimaginable. Well, unimaginable for normal folks. Those people do things to extend their lives even at the cost of others. Could this all be connected to the pervasive atmosphere we're living in today? The constant fear-mongering going on day and night. The world is going to end because of, well, just insert any of the many reasons that the earth is going to end. There's been hundreds of them. Where was I? The people on the news have been saying the earth is going to end ever since about 1946, I believe. As the beings who live on fear increase in size and number, they would require more fear to keep them going. It could be those people who encounter a Bigfoot or a Dogman and run for their lives are being set up as an energy source. When the LPRS is doing a guest event, we ask if anybody is scared. Anybody who fesses up gets to go first. This is their emotions that are being projected out into the atmosphere that will hopefully attract spirits. Hey, it works. Guest events, they want to encounter ghosts, and we aim to please. What could explain away all the people who were able to outrun a huge monster other than it was set up that way? Maybe I'm seeing something here that doesn't exist. It can't all be some kind of a giant conspiracy, or could it? Linda Godfrey, who was on my show a couple of times, told me that Indian mounds are found all over the country, and many dogman sightings have been reported near one of these mounds. We don't really know what some of these mounds were built for. The locals say that most of them were there long before their ancestors arrived in the area. We don't know why Dogman would be hanging around in these places. With all the sightings, we never hear about people being killed by Dogman. He is either not a flesh and blood being, or his purpose in these instances is something that we just can't guess at. Maybe Dogman is a vegetarian. I doubt it. He's got huge canine teeth, and beings with huge teeth tend not to be vegetarians. I've also heard of Bigfoot and Dogman fighting each other, while in other stories they seem to be working together. Instead of answering any questions, I've gotten myself and you all more confused. The trouble is, those with all the answers, they're not telling us. The whole purpose for this show was to get some of y'all to think. Not that you don't know how to think, but to think about why these stories come out the way they do. Why does a person walk into the woods, encounter a huge, hairy creature that could kill them easily, and yet they're able to escape from it? If scaring people is the plan, what else is going on, since only certain people are being chased from locations where others walk around without a care? If these beings are trying to catch dinner, they're all going to starve to death real soon. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and I hope the cats howling in the background didn't upset you too much. They broke a few too many expensive things in the house, and so now they've all been locked away in my studio, since it's the only room in the house that's big enough that they can exercise and things. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, your neighbors, people you meet on the street to listen to Strange Things with Chris James. If you didn't enjoy the show, then why are you listening to me? It makes no sense. Until next Saturday, this is Chris James for Strange Things. Oh yes, and remember the music. Baby Fly.